Following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
Greetings and welcome to another edition of Technology Bites. Thank you.
Good stuff, man. Good stuff. Welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
He's missing in action.
All right.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight.
And he's...
Groove House.
It's a groove. He's mighty, mighty. He's letting it all hang out.
I wonder if that's Pete calling in.
I don't know.
We'll have to check.
All right, well, welcome to the show, and thank God fundraiser is over. I'm just tired. I'm tired just thinking about it. Just thinking about the
don't
last...
Don't think about it. Think
I
about,
haven't recovered
Think about
yet.
The geek gathering on Friday.
I'm tired thinking about that, too. We should have good weather for the geek gathering.
Yeah, it should be nice.
Post-rain.
We're
going to have the washout.
Yeah.
It's not even really... Is it going to get cooler? No.
A little bit.
Drier, maybe?
Drier, yeah. Yeah,
yeah, so geek gathering on Friday. That'll be good. And no fundraising. That's good. Thanks to everybody who participated during the fundraiser by calling in or going on the web and making a pledge. We appreciate that. We ended up doing really well, so I'm glad. We had a big turnaround on the last day. I think the pledge snake was what
the pledge snake did it.
Yeah. So tonight, Technology Bites is back to normal. So you're going to visit us if you like to. Visit us on the website, geekradio.com. You can hang out with us on IRC, irc.cuckoo.com, in the channel Tech Bites. Or you can, if you have your own IRC client, just join the server, irc.cuckoo.com, or go to our website. We have a web-based Java client, IRC client, that you can use if you want to get on to the IRC that way. What do you...
I was going
to...
Well, Flicted just dropped out of IRC. People are complaining that we are broadcasting low. People think the levels are low. Audio's low.
Audio's low?
or are we just talking low?
They said that it's, yeah, wow.
It's low.
I'm in my own head now.
How low can you go?
See what you've done. It's louder in the headphones now, that's for sure.
We can hear us. No one else needs to. I
mean, this is called clipping.
Clipping? Yeah. All right, so, yeah, so we have the, we've given you that information. And the phone number, if you want to call in a little bit later on, where we're actually going to take calls on the air at, now it went away again, 713-526-5738. If you want to be on the air, we'll be fielding your calls a little bit later in the show. Hopefully we're going to find Peter Hughes here somewhere. He's out and about or doing, are you looking under the table?
Not under there.
Nope, not under there. Would be kind of distressing if he was under there. And yeah, so how's everybody doing? Everybody have a good week?
Yes.
Dwight's trying to get regular again or something.
I think he's gonna Hulk out. He's like, you know,
you don't want to see me when I'm angry.
No, I had a good week. Yeah, I've had fun.
Are you driving that
2014 Kia Soul out there? I have to give it up tomorrow for a 2014 Corolla.
You got a brand new car to give me a ride on a road trip with that.
Oh, I'm sorry. I went to Corpus Christi. I went to my parents' house.
So tell the listening audience what you've got.
So I've been doing this series of reviews. I'm reviewing inexpensive cars, i.e. under $25,000, that have really good tech in them. And I had reviewed the 2013 Kia Soul. And so I wanted to do the 2014 because the in-dash tech, the operating system in the 13, was a Microsoft operating system. This is Android. And so, and I'd heard that they had greatly improved it. It also has an 8-inch touchscreen in it, which is bigger than like a Nexus 7.
Is there going to be like a thing with cars now where you have to choose an Android car or a Windows car or an iOS car?
They're trying to standardize, the automotive industry is trying to standardize on like a modular kind of car OS. And I've heard it may even be Android based, is what the rumors are.
Well, Apple is starting to get into the game. They are increasingly making, getting involved with operating system developers so that it works. Like, for example, there's a batch of cars that'll come out that'll work really well with Siri. But next year, there will be like iOS 7 in the dash. So it will be, it's getting really interesting. This operating system in this car is probably better in terms of ease of use and functionality and speed than the others I've tried. This is the first one where the voice recognition actually works. Usually, when you try to use the built-in voice recognition, it fails miserably. This one works.
Are they using Google's engine, back-end engine, the same one they use for the Android searches?
I can't tell what it is.
So is the modding community getting on this?
It's too new. It just came out. So, but I suspect...
Is this the first car with Android?
This is the first Kia with Android. I don't know if other cars have it previously. I suspect they do. I don't know what Dodge uses in its software, but it looks like it may be Android.
Be cool if you could eventually get to the point where you can run custom firmwares, you know, for your car.
The thing is, it's so integrated into the car. So, for example, on the screen, when I'm low on gas, you get a thing on the touchscreen that says, are you low on gas? Do you want to look for a gas station? And you can type yes, and then it will show you on the map where gas stations are. So that is part of the, you know, the fuel system is tied into this thing. And I think you might want to be careful about messing around with modding your car.
If you could change your mixtures a little bit, you know.
You can definitely, like, that's, you know, kind of rechipping it. But, yeah, that's been a big racer community. That's right. Where people who want to, like, do race and homebrew stuff, they'll get the setups to be able to mod, you know, intake and mixtures and what have you.
But yeah. I wonder if that's any of that's controlled through the operating system on the Android.
Well, probably not.
There's usually two operating systems. There's usually multiple components. And with multiple but there is some kind of networking between them. They talk to each other.
They talk, but there's a CAN bus, which, you know, like ties in like the door locks to the windows to like the turn signals. Right. But then there's a firewalled engine control module, which controls the engine and gas and stuff like that. And those are pretty, you know, there's a firewall between them. You can't really control one from the other. But you can hack this stuff.
No, I know. Like, I remember even as, you know, as long ago as like 20, you know, 15 years ago with people that were getting modified chips for their cars that would allow them to get more horsepower, more torque, and things like that. Like the Audi TT was one of the big popular cars to modify. You could buy these aftermarket chips that you could put in and get more power out of your car. So I wouldn't be surprised. All right, so I don't know if we've managed to work out the Skype issues. No word, huh? All right.
The only issue is that Pete's not online, so.
Okay.
Skype works,
as far as we know.
As far as I know. I don't have any friends, so nobody's on. Actually, this isn't my normal.
I don't have any friends.
This isn't my normal Skype account, so I don't have. I think there's only two or three accounts on it.
No, that's okay. We'll just make do without Pete for a little while. Just be fine. All right, so the phone number, if you want to be on the air, if Pete doesn't show up for the show, then I understand he's probably sleeping it off because the fundraiser was pretty grueling. But if Pete doesn't show up, we're going to go to the phones a little bit sooner than later. So if you want to get the cue to be on the air with Technology Bites, I know he's been listening for the last 3 weeks, and there hasn't been any phone calls on the air, so it was like, you might have forgotten this was a phone-in show. But the phone number is 713-526-5738. And no, we don't have a snake. Sorry. Uh-huh. Speak for yourself.
We don't have a 5-foot snake.
Speak for yourself.
Yeah. Dream on there, snake boy. He's choking on his own lies. All right. So anyway, we do have a... I don't know what Groovehouse is doing. Groovehouse is looking at somebody, talking to stuff. So he needs to be distracted with incoming phone calls. 713-526-5738. As I mentioned, and I don't think we touched on it enough, but we have a geek gathering coming up this Friday. So we're going to be meeting up at Cone's for our monthly geek gathering. And that's been getting better and better and better and better and better every month. I will confess, I did not have a lot of hope. I did not have great expectations for that location. But it has turned out to be just a spectacular place to have the geek gathering. So we thank Cone for his participation and allowing us to use his space and patronize his establishment for our geek gathering. So there have been other events have happened there while we're there, and it hasn't been a problem. And
in fact, there often is an art opening on the first Friday.
Dwight counts on those for free cheese.
Gee, they have great cheese at the art opening.
Those artists and their cheese. Yeah, that's what they're good for. Do you paint? Are you a photographer? Do you sculpt? What kind of cheese do you have? I'm only coming
here. I'm only here for the cheese.
The cheese crashers. That's Dwight is a cheese crasher. So, yeah, so the geek gathering will be happening, and we invite you to come out to that and hang out with us. It's a good time. And I think we've kind of gotten a new convert out of Lee Hutchins from Ars Technica.
Yep.
He comes out now regularly. He even makes jokes about it on Twitter. So that's a good thing. The Geek Gathering is a good use to
might have. I don't know if we'll have Peter Bright this time from Ars Technica, but he might be there now that he lives here.
Yeah.
So Dr.
depends
Pizza.
On how much what the snark value is.
Depends on what
the snark value for Dr. Pizza.
Yes.
He has
yes.
to kind of hold it in contempt. All right, so. Looks like Groovehouse gave me a thumbs up. I don't know if that's because Pete's around.
I see Pete's little face on Flicked screen.
Pete's little face. Hey, Pete's little face.
I'm Peter Hughes.
Well, welcome to the show. Where have you been?
I've been here. The thing is, my Skype had crashed, but it was still showing in the dock. So when Flicked contacted, when he texted me, then I looked, and then it's like, oh, application not responding. How nice. Because I was looking for some stuff for the news, and so I got caught up in that and didn't realize it was kind of late.
Whoops.
And then I hadn't heard from any of you.
Well, we're kind of cutting it by the skin of our teeth here tonight. Flicked showed up at the last minute and just doesn't have that same, everybody's just so tired and just kind of falling back and resting on their laurels after the fundraiser, so it just doesn't have that same kind of momentum.
Plus, you got the Halloween Eve syndrome.
That's true. Tomorrow's Halloween or rain or ween or something. It's going to be a big, I like the fact that they're calling it a rain event. Tomorrow we're going to be experiencing a significant rain event. It's going to be such a rain event that the guy from Nova Scotia has even done an updated video.
That was awesome.
Yeah.
We're on the map.
This guy's, I got to find that I gotta find this. I think the Houston news channels, the weather people, need to make way for this guy. This guy needs to do the what? This guy needs to do a promo for the show. That's what I'm thinking.
Oh.
That would be kind of awesome. Let's see if I can find my. Had the there he is. Haha. This guy is.
My own TV station live in Sydney, Nova Scotia. Severe thunderstorms is headed for Houston, Texas on Thursday, October the 31st, 2013. It's going to rain up to 50 plus millimeters of rain, especially with thunderstorms in Houston, Texas on Thursday, October the 31st, 2013, because of the cold front. It's going through Houston, Texas, isn't it? It's very humid outside in Houston, Texas as well. That's going to cause a lot of severe thunderstorms on Thursday, October the 31st, 2013. It's going to be a chain lightning, a very loud thunder in Houston, Texas. It's going to be a lot of rain and sideways rain and very strong winds for people living in Houston, Texas as well.
I think we found the new voice.
People in Houston, Texas, be prepared. Have your rubber boots ready. Have your ankles ready. Have your rain suits ready. Because it's going to be a lot of rain. And the sewers will back up in the streets in Houston, Texas.
The sewers will back up into the streets in Houston.
He should do traffic.
The guy goes on to say, you know, make sure that you get your food ordered, get your pizzas ordered. And
so do you, can you, are you going to tweet that? Please tweet that. Because I want to get it. I want to get it over to Eric Berger, and that's the best way to get it.
You Facebooked it, too.
I tweeted it earlier, but I couldn't tweet
somehow it through you.
Again, so. Yeah, let's do. Because
Eric needs to see that. I think he needs some schooling.
I got it to Tim Heller, but let me see. Let me tweet that out. So,
some of the people need some schooling in Houston, Texas.
What's his Twitter? At Eric
Kronsci guy.
Kronsci guy.
Yeah.
Sci-gui. All right. So there, off it goes, and I'll make sure Kronsci guy sees it.
I think he went to the Canadian branch of the Marvin Zindler School of News Delivery.
This is the second video that this guy has put out, and he's in Nova Scotia, and
he's got hundreds.
Oh, he's got, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much every major city he's gotten that has any kind of, you know, signs of rain, and he's never gotten Houston, so that's why I'm saying we have now arrived.
He's never gotten, no,
this well, is I haven't seen the Houston one
before. This is the
second
Houston one. This is the second time he's done Houston, Texas. He's up in Nova Scotia.
The first time.
That's okay. You got the joy of having it be new to you. That's something that we all can be envious of. But yeah, so it goes on for a full 5.5 minutes. So let me see what the guy's name is, if I can remember, if I can find his actual name. But it goes on and says, severe thunderstorms on its way for Houston, Texas on Thursday, October 21st, blah, blah, blah.
His name's Frankie.
Frankie something, right? Yeah. But there's it actually has. Oh well, I can't find his name.
His username is something else.
He's got like 6,000 followers on Twitter. All right, so major rain event in Houston, Texas. He says, "Don't open your umbrellas outside because they will break in the rain." All right, so we're gonna. You got a news? You got an info shot for us, Pete?
Absolutely.
You got to do it delivered in the same style. Apple Computers will be releasing a new iPhone.
He'll lose his voice.
All right, so let's do the info shot. Cue the music. Cue the music!
It's the Technology Bytes info shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
Okay, as much as I would like to shout it and do the Canadian style, I can't do it. And the new, and there's too much interesting news. I don't want to say good news. A fascinating one. This one is actually, to me, is news on the info shot because of the lack of information. You know, regardless of how you feel about the Affordable Care Act thing, the launch of the technology side of it has been in the news. And so one of the things that I thought would be very interesting for tonight's show was to look at, you know, I'm familiar with corporate, you know, with enterprise scale projects, and so are, you know, so are some of the other people on the show. And so I thought, well, let's see what does it say? You know, what went wrong? What is the postmortem on why it's got problems? And you can find a million articles about that this has a lot of impact and this is critical and that the failure is massive or the failure is this or the, but nothing that says what actually isn't working. Oh, there's bugs. Oh, and I tried to log in, it didn't work. Yeah, so I looked and I still don't know. I mean, one of the key things that I did find out in the course of my research is one thing to know, it's an old study and I don't believe that it's changed, but large scale software projects in businesses, you know, since, you know, government can't do anything, right? So businesses would be way better, right? Yeah, apparently in large scale enterprise projects, these are multi-million dollar software projects, a third of them never get delivered. A third of them fail totally, don't even happen. Another third of them apparently don't deliver what they were supposed to deliver, but they do deliver something. So they just deliver but don't really work right and all that. And then a third actually do what they're supposed to do or do enough of it to be considered successful. And so, you know, I think this raises the issue of that it is difficult to build these kinds of big things. That's not an excuse. I would really like to know kind of where are these glitches and what are they? It's just nobody gets to see anything, or nobody who can talk or talk to the press seems to get to see anything to say anything with it. I do think from what I read around, you know, it sounds like the software is really the issue. You know, if it was just an issue of capacity, of physical capacity, that's the easiest thing to solve. But if your software isn't set up for it, then you're not going to, you know, it doesn't matter. You can throw more machines at it, and if they're crashing with the same bug, they're not going to get better. But I'm going to keep an eye on this because I, you know, like I said, I have some knowledge of these kinds of scale projects. And, you know, I guess one of the things maybe just in reading around is that apparently there were 55 different contractors who worked on the website, and there wasn't any one contractor who was in charge of all of them. So that could be an ingredient. There's an opinion piece from a professor of computer science at Columbia University, and he says that we shouldn't be surprised by the technical problems because failures and delays in big, large-scale software projects are so common as to, quote, almost be the norm, not the exception, unquote. It sounds like one of the other things, I guess, that I did get from reading around is that it sounds like there was not enough time spent on testing and, you know, that they did not allow enough time from development to then testing. It sounds like the testing was done internally, not necessarily by the professionals. And so, of course, one of the things that I saw firsthand on doing projects is testing is the orphan child of big projects. So every delay that happens while you're building the project, because the deadline never changes. That's one thing I've always noticed. Your big corporate project, the deadline doesn't change once you say it the first time. You know, if you say, oh, well, it'll be 1st of November or whatever, then that your client will remember forever. They can be like have a stroke and forget everything else, but they will remember that date no matter what else happens. And testing is the time that's left between when the developers say, well, it's done enough, and the launch date. And sometimes those are the same day. And it sounds like there was some of that with it. So I'm gonna keep my eye on this one because I just think it's interesting, and I think that it is an interesting enough question as to what went wrong to kind of hear. I think that it would be worthwhile. So I will watch this one and see if any kind of information squeaks out, although it certainly seems to not right now. In other government news, since they can't do anything right, they did apparently Well, this was an the lead in on this is from this is All Things D. While he didn't, quote, explode in profanity, unquote, as some of his company engineers are said to have done, Google's chief legal officer slapped the National Security Agency pretty hard in a statement just shared with All Things D in reaction to new revelations about the agency's effort to spy on its users. The Washington Post reported that based on some new leaks from former NSA contractor Edward Snowden, that the NSA has been using the fiber optic cables between data centers operated by Google and Yahoo to collect email communications. The story said the NSA exploits its own backdoor access to data links between data centers under an intelligence collection program called Muscular. Drummond said, Google is, quote, outraged. Let's see, quote, this is the quote from Google. We have long been concerned about the possibility of this kind of snooping, which is why we have continued to extend encryption across more and more Google services and links, especially the links in the slide. We do not provide any government, including the U.S. government, with access to our systems. We are outraged at the links to which the government seems to have gone to intercept data from our private fiber networks, and it underscores the need for urgent reform. The NSA basically says, let's see. They say they don't collect vast quantities of U.S. persons' data from this type of collection. The NSA applies attorney general approved processes to protect the privacy of U.S. persons. It's all kind of, I guess the deal is they're getting everything so they can find stuff about foreigners, but we should all be fine, I think, we should all not worry about it, thing. One key document in the latest link is a hand-drawn illustration that sketches out the part of the communications chain where Google's infrastructure meets the public internet and points at an intriguing box labeled GFE for Google front-end server, with notes pointing to it that say SSL added and removed here. SSL refers, of course, to secure socket layer, the common encryption technology, you know, basically how they encrypt stuff on the web when it's out in the network. There's also a knowing smiley face implying something interesting, so interesting, in fact, that two Google engineers who saw it reportedly, quote, exploded in profanity, unquote. It'll probably be a while before we learn anything about the mechanics of it all, but there are a few basic principles to understand about tapping fiber optic lines. The equipment on either end of these cables turns electrical signals into light and then later back into electrical signals, and it's during the phase when the data is being transmitted as light that the tap probably occurs. So the deal is, you know, the signals can only go so far. It's light waves, and they weaken over distance, so they have to be boosted or regenerated along the way, in fact, about every 50 miles. This regeneration equipment is placed along the lines, whether they're under the sea or on land, and provide natural places where some of these collection points may be. There's also thoughts that there's a nuclear submarine that's been outfitted to carry out intelligence collection on undersea cables. And according to a Wall Street Journal report in 2001, the U.S. first started experimenting with methods to tap these cables in the mid-1990s. So isn't that fascinating? Of course, doing this outside of U.S. territory is done under a looser legal framework than inside. But, basically the article here concludes that in the end, the story and the documents on which it is based collectively raise many more questions than they answer. Just when you thought the disclosures from the Snowden files couldn't get any more troubling, they do, because that's the NSA getting into the internal networks of Google and Yahoo, which I think Yahoo's the bigger is the bigger one of concern. Now, here's one. Why didn't any of us, you know, Dwight, me, Barrett, somebody, why didn't any of us inadvertently do this? There's a gentleman named Christopher Koch, I'm assuming, K-O-C-H. He was a student who was researching a paper about encryption in 2009. He came across the online currency Bitcoin and thought it would be, you know, interesting to buy some, you know, having heard about it. So he bought $25 worth of Bitcoin in 2009, and then he forgot about it because it was $25. So he just bought it. So fast forward to this spring. And he, you know, when Silk Road closed down and there was lots of stories about Bitcoin, Well, Coke recalled his impulsive purchase from 2009. He remembered his password and checked in on his little Bitcoin collection. When he opened his digital wallet, he found 5,000 Bitcoins worth about $850,000 from buying $25 for doing a paper in 2009. How come none of us gets that lucky? We'd never have another pledge drive for Technology Bytes again if one of us stumbled across that kind of investment. it never happens to us. But there is this story, and it's true, and it did happen to this guy on the Bitcoin thing. Now, rushing out to do it now, your $25 worth of Bitcoin ain't going to turn into $850,000 in 5 or 6 years, or 4 or 5 years for that matter. So just don't worry about that one. Interesting, change of things. There's the number of people who participate in something, network effects, is kind of important and is a big measure of stuff. For instance, when more people had, when more data was going over the data lines, the internet data lines, than was going over the voice phone lines, that was a big event in the course of things. Well, this one might be interesting. Digital game online storefront Steam today announced a 30% growth in their active accounts during the last 12 months, bringing the company's total users to 65 million. That increase in users puts the cross-platform game distribution service ahead of Xbox Live, which has 48 million users. So this is, in a sense, this is gaming on the cloud or gaming from the cloud versus... obviously the Microsoft, the Xbox Live thing is their closed garden, is their proprietary thing that only goes with their boxes, where Steam is cross-platform to different operating systems and so on. So kind of interesting as people vote with – a lot of those accounts may overlap, but still it's interesting that an online system like this – when it passes something with a big game console install base, that's interesting. An interesting change in things that may point to interesting stuff in the future. And of course, last week and during the pledge drive, they had the announcements on the new iPads and the new Apple stuff. And it's been long enough that I would think you've probably heard most of the specs in that. And so I'm not going to belabor those now when it's kind of day late and dollar short time. The thing that's very interesting is that the reviews of the iPad Air, the new large iPad, have started coming out. I believe I think that you can get it this Friday is when you'll be able to buy it, the iPad Air. So the benchmarks and the reviews and stuff are just really, apparently are... people are very, very enthusiastic, and the performance on it is dramatically above the fourth generation iPad. And frankly, from reading the reviews, it's stronger than just about anything else out there. That A7 processor is really making the iPad Air stand out. That the new kind of thinner design and stuff is impressing people. And this is not, I didn't go and look at a selection of Apple fanboys who are going to love anything that Apple puts out. This is stuff like where they ran the benchmarks and show the numbers, and it's pretty phenomenal on multi-core performance, the Geekbench 3 multi-core score. The iPad fourth generation scored 1408. And the iPad Air scored 2643. So just knowing the, obviously the numbers, it's almost double the performance. And just for reference, say the iPad 2 or the iPad Mini is like 490 on that particular test. Now that could be cherry picked, but the thing is, all kinds of reviews are in. I wonder if that, I haven't had a strong desire to buy the iPad Air, and I've heard a lot of people talk about, they're not going to upgrade because they're still happy with the iPad they have or the tablet device they have. But I wonder if some people, as these glowing reviews get out, if there's not going to be some people who change their mind, because apparently this one really is, it's not sexy. It's not something you look at from from the outside, although obviously the new look of the iPad Air has changed, but apparently the usage of it is impressive enough that it draws people's comment. And I think that's because they didn't expect it. In a redesign that's maybe not receiving quite as much positive attention as the iPad, and no, I didn't do this on purpose, but putting these back to back, according to PC World, in their gadgets column, second gen Google Glass looks even dorkier than the original. Google somehow found a way to make Glass look even nerdier. On Tuesday, the company posted photos of the next version of Glass to its official Google Plus page, and we can't help but notice how much worse the second generation Glass looks compared to the original. Apparently, part of it is the design is mostly unchanged, but there's an earbud that plugs into the charging port and makes you look even more like an Android. You know, imagine the kind of Borg thing. If you watched Star Trek, it comes off the side of the glasses and then has this big black blob in your ear. So it's not sexy. I'll say that from the picture. Now, of course, we'll see what it gets to by the time it gets mainstream. But it may be that – are we going to really have to wait? We have to wait for Apple to design the, like, sexy, cool glasses that everybody's going to want? Or is Google going to be able to take advantage of kind of this open space that it has to itself? And finally, Sprint has announced the first four smartphones that are going to be compatible with its new ultra-fast LTE service. The phones are the Samsung Galaxy S4 Mini, the Galaxy Mega, HTC One Max, and the LG G2 that'll come out with their new system. Let's see, one of the houses, Sprint representatives did drop some hints, however, about some of the other ones, that there are other phones. One of the phones will be unveiled, quote, in the coming days, unquote, and will house a number of firsts, which sounds a lot like the highly anticipated Nexus 5, which has only one day left to launch in order to hit its rumored end of October reveal date. Support for all major U.S. carriers, including Sprint, are expected in that. The second handset will be a refresh of a device that's already been released, of these new ones that they're going to announce. Sprint projects that Spark will work its way up to a network speed of 1 gigabit per second. Ultimately, but first we'll clock in at 50 to 60 megabits per second. It's available today in 4 cities: New York, Los Angeles, Chicago, Tampa, and Miami. Anything that with the real potential to get up to basically gigabit Ethernet speeds sounds like a potential winner to me. And that's the news.
All right, thanks for that, Peter.
Wow, that's the best Jay Lee post impression I've ever heard.
Yay. All right, 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with us this evening.
And we have a goal of getting to all your calls tonight. Yes, and that's the only goal we have.
The only goal we have is to talk to you about technology, maybe solve a problem or two. What's the matter, Barrett?
My fans are kicking on. Something must be running in the background, or someone's are.
My fans.
That's yours, or
I'm fans? Processing some pretty heavy images over here.
Oh, okay.
Taking a look at some wedding photos I took. So, yeah, that's my fan. Hear it?
Yes.
Yeah, it's not you. It's not you, it's me.
That's a relief.
You have a fan?
I have one or two. I don't know how many fans the new MacBook Air has. I'll say I really have enjoyed this MacBook Air. I've enjoyed it so much I've hardly touched my iMac. I mean, I use it a little bit. It's nice to have that giant screen and all, but this laptop really does it all. I think this might actually be the perfect laptop. All right, so no phones are ringing. I assume they work. That could be a
that they switched them over. It's only been a week.
It's only been a week. They I'm sure they got it all sorted out. So...
Call in and our volunteer Groove House will take your information and get you on the show.
So
713-526-5738 is the number.
It's the number to call to ask us a question, not to give us money.
Yeah, we're not asking for money right now. We are not asking for money.
Other than individually, you can can toss us all a sawbuck if you want, but
a sawbuck,
$100.
A sawbuck.
You haven't heard that phrase?
I've heard it. I'm just amazed that it just came out of you. It's like a, I want to call it a Starbuck.
Now. It's Talk Like a Geezer Day on KPFD.
It is Talk Like a Geezer Day. Every day is Talk Like a Geezer Day. It's Talk Like a Grizzle Prospector Day. So, Geek Gathering, fundraiser's over. Thanks for pledging. Good night. So it looks like we're going to be preempted, too. We're going to be preempted on November the 20th because we're going to do a fundraiser for the archives. And Technology Bites falls on Christmas this year, so we're going to. Looks like we may be handing our show over to Ray Hill. Ray Hill wants to do a special program on Christmas night, so we'll have to remember to play our song the week before Christmas.
Right, but that also means that we'll end up doing
New Year's Day.
New Year's Day, which isn't too bad. That's not too bad.
No, it's not bad.
Although, aren't there a bunch of like football games on that night? So.
Aren't they on during the day?
I think they're like
golf round 5 or something. I have no idea. Yeah. 2. I'm making it up.
You're asking this group of nerds about sporting events on a holiday. Groovehouse would know because Groovehouse is into sports and stuff. He goes out and photographs football games and basketball games, and
he's got his head on backwards. He looks sporty.
He does. He's answering our call right now, so it looks like we're going to have somebody be on the air with us tonight.
Yay!
So we're waiting on that. 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with us tonight. And, all right, calls are coming in. Now yes. We just got to wait till we can grab
Most
one.
Excellent.
Somebody probably wants to talk about Mavericks and then the Transformer tablet more than meets the Windows 8.1.
Hmm.
All right. Howdy, howdy, Groovehouse. Hi, Groovehouse.
Hello.
So I see you've been busy.
Working the phones.
Working it.
Yes.
Work it. So do you have one that we
Ready
should
to
take?
Go?
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, who's up?
All right, up first on the show, we're going to speak with Mike.
Mike, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Thanks, guys. I enjoy listening to you guys.
Well, thank you.
Awesome show. I have a quick question regarding Mavericks.
Okay.
One is, why is it that when I'm getting text message, it's not popping up, you know, on the screen as they say, you know, it would have. And second, AirDrop on Mavericks. How come I can't AirDrop from my phone, my iPhone, to my MacBook Pro? You know,
let's talk about the first one first. So, text messages to your MacBook Pro, are these text messages that are sent to you to your phone?
Right. I mean, I can. I've tested it, which I send text message from my MacBook Pro to my phone. You know, I would get it, but you know, I don't like if I send text message to my phone. Supposed to show up on my MacBook Pro.
Why do you think that?
I read about it.
Well, if you're typing on the phone on the MacBook, and you're having a conversation with somebody who has an iPhone,
right.
You will see that conversation back and forth with them.
On your because you're sending the message. But if you receive a text message on your iPhone. You will not receive that same text message on your Mac.
You will if it's iMessage.
If it's iMessage, you will,
right.
But not like just
not an SMS.
Not an SMS.
So it has to come from an iPhone as an iMessage.
Ah, okay.
So it's not just any text message.
I got you. But I would be able to send any text message to any Android or iPhone from my MacBook Pro, right?
No.
No.
Again, I think that's only to iPhones and to people who have an iMessage account.
Okay. And then the other one is AirDrop. I mean, I thought you would work from MacBook Pro to iPhone and back and forth.
No, it does not. AirDrop works only between iOS devices on iOS devices and between Macs on Macs. And I think one of the reasons is that Apple controls
the file system
and the kind of files it allows on iOS devices. So for basically what they don't want you doing is sharing music that you're not authorized to have and video that you're not authorized to have with your mobile devices.
Okay, so but they could have made it capable of enabling people to do that.
I don't know.
Okay.
You know, it's possible if you jailbreak your phone, there may be some apps that allow it, but mm-hmm. on the stock phones, it's not going to happen.
Okay. And I was just hoping you guys, I may have missed the show last week or so, but I was hoping you guys would share with us any of those cool features that you probably already have experimented on, because I'd love to learn more about Mavericks.
Well, I mean, you know, just kind of, it's kind of a blanket thing. I mean, we the last few weeks we've been in fundraisers, so shame on you for missing those shows and not participating there.
I go there. I mean, I call for that every once in a while.
Okay,
so.
Well, that's good.
Thank you.
But the last 3 weeks, unfortunately, during the release of Mavericks and iOS 7 and all of that stuff, you know, all the new stuff that was coming out, we were doing a radio, we're doing fundraisers, so we didn't really get to talk about it. So I've only had, I guess, when was the release? Was Wednesday last week?
Last Tuesday.
Tuesday, right. So I've had a week to play with Mavericks. And I mean, I don't know that I've tapped into it. I mean, there's a few features. Have you got Mavericks installed on your MacBook? Ben, I think you said you did, yeah. Have you gone online and looked at, like, there's a number of websites to talk about. Here's the cool new features of Mavericks.
In fact, it has after you've used it for about 30 minutes or so, a little pop-up appears that offers to give you a tour. Did you take that?
Oh, you know what? Yeah, I should have done that. I've seen it.
Yeah, it'll keep coming, I think, until you actually do it.
I think if you go under, in the Help Center, there's what's new in OS X Mavericks. When you're in the Finder, just go to the Help menu, and it's right it's below the search.
One of my favorite features in it actually relates to iMessage, and that is if you receive an iMessage and you get a notification for it that pops up in the upper right-hand corner, you can actually click on the notification and reply from there. And you don't, and I'm the messages app itself doesn't have to be running, which is really useful. That's really handy. It also has tabs in the Finder, so mm-hmm. you can have multiple tabs for multiple folders, similar to the way you have multiple tabs for pages in your browser, and that is extremely handy.
Yeah, and I did see that the prioritization, the color coding, things like that. Okay.
Yeah, the tags are interesting. You know, what's funny about the tags is that Windows has had that since Vista, and nobody uses it that I know of in Vista. So I'm not sure how many people actually use it.
I wish that that tags had existed a long time ago, and I might have used them just to find content, because I do that with file names and folder names to be able to find stuff more easily when I'm searching for it. But the idea of throwing a tag on all of these images or whatever is kind of cool.
Yeah, I think maybe for somebody like you who deals in mass numbers of files,
right,
that they have to keep up with. But for most people who are just kind of doing standard disk maintenance and dealing with, you know, a few documents and so forth, it kind of isn't worth changing your workflow, I don't think.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you so much, as always, and you guys. Keep up the great job.
All right, thanks for your call.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
And actually, of course, the best feature is that it's free.
Yeah, I mean, there's absolutely no reason whatsoever that I can think of not to upgrade to Mavericks. I mean, it's not going to change. I mean, it's going to add functionality. Even if you don't need it, you don't have to use
right.
it. But it doesn't take away. It didn't change the operating system so dramatically like it was using a different operating system.
But there is one potential downfall, and that is some software is incompatible with it. So, for example, I use this app for doing screenshots. It also does video screenshots. Screen capture is called Snaps Pro X. And It's by a company called Ambrosia Software that earlier this year went out of business. And this, a lot of book authors use this software. It's really good for doing screenshots for books. And now the company's out of business and they don't have a version for Mavericks. I happen to be on their forum. They're still maintaining a forum, apparently. And it looks like that some of the programmers who worked for it are going to update it for Mavericks. But for now, I'm kind of crippled without it. It's how I do all my screenshots. And it works. It takes one screenshot, and then you have to restart it. It doesn't stay in the background like it should. So it's kind of a pain.
So you don't know how to do. You don't like using the built-in screenshot?
This gives you a lot more capabilities. It gives you it allows you to choose whether the cursor is visible, which you may want if you're doing documentation.
Right.
It allows you to choose at the time that you do the screenshot what the file format is. You can change the color depth at the time you do the screenshot. It's very very useful.
Okay. Then don't upgrade to Mavericks, everybody. Just
no,
wait.
Just wait. But what you should do is check your critical software before you do it.
Yeah, I kind of took a leap of faith. I mean, all my
2008 has problems with it too.
Really?
Yeah.
There's no easy way to back out either, is there?
No. You have to kind of start from scratch.
Huh.
You might be able, if you have a
time machine.
I guess
you
could
restore
do
from that. But as soon as you do it, it'll do a time machine update, you know, and you'll end up with the newer operating system on time machine.
I like the new activity monitor. It's gone from being a very, you know, one-line Unix-y kind of thing to where you can see your network. You can actually go and look in. You know, before you could always kind of see what applications were consuming memory, but now you can go see what bandwidth they're consuming. You can see, you know, break it down at the application level. So if you're having issues, you can go find the culprit pretty quickly.
And I like the flashlight. Oh, wait. No, that's...
All right. 713-526-5738. See, we got a nice bank of calls,
Yay.
But we do have some open lines. If you want to be on the air, 713-526-KPFT. Groovehouse?
Yes.
Who do we have up next?
Up next, we're going to speak with Sam.
Sam, you're on the air with Technology Bytes.
Hello, good evening.
Good evening.
Thank you for taking my call. I have a little bit of a dilemma with my Asus tablet transformer. It's an older model, 101F, I guess it is, or... and it has this endless boot loop on Android. I tried different things, you know, cold boot, the volume down, hold the power, nothing worked. Then I went on the forums. I tried to download it on the micro card and boot up from there with the volume up power. It gave me like a dead Android, you know, icon. So then I read more in the forum, say, well, you have a corrupt firmware, then you got to do a, like Easy Flasher. There's a tool. And then put the tablet in APX mode, which is kind of, I guess, is a mode to be able to flash it, you know, with this tool called Easy Flasher. The problem is my Windows doesn't detect it. I mean, I cannot make it talk, and when it's in going through the endless loop, it cannot never really grab it to capture it to you know, put connect it to Windows. So I'm in a kind of dilemma here. I cannot even use that tool for Easy Flasher, and I thought maybe somebody in the radio station or in the audience has had this problem. I had some tips or suggestions.
That's a tough one. So it's an Android device, right?
It's an Android, yeah. It's the Asus. It's the kind of the one that came with the docking keyboard.
Right.
It's 101.
You can't get it to any kind of state where it's like waiting or standby where it's just constantly rebooting, right?
It's constantly rebooting. And then if you hold the volume up and the power button, you press it for 10 seconds, you get in the mode called APX. And that one is where you're supposed to be able to to be able to flash it completely. You know, I don't mind to wipe it. I just want it working. But the problem is I've never really connected it in that mode before. I just use it, you know, just like a tablet to...
Have you tried to bring it up in the APX mode while it's connected to a USB to your computer?
Yeah, you know, while I'm putting it in APX mode connected to the computer, I think I tried that too, and it didn't really pop up as you know, you have a new device because you're supposed to put some APX drivers to do this easy flasher. Part. So it's a little bit frustrating because, I mean, the tablet is still pretty good. It's not that old. I mean, it's a 10-inch tablet. It's got all the stuff we need for the family. It's got a front-end camera and all that.
No, it's all right. I understand it's a good device. Let's focus on the problem at hand. So, unfortunately, if you're not able to get... do you have access to a Mac by chance?
Yes, I do.
Have you tried? Is there software that will let you flash it from a Mac?
I went to the forums, the developer forums. There's one for it's called X something. It specializes in all the Android, you know, all the
right,
Android
I got
tools
you.
Are there. And that's what this Easy Flasher tool was, and it runs only on Windows. I have not found one that runs on Mac.
Okay, what I've had one, my previous phone was an Android phone, and I tended to have better luck getting it connected to a Mac. I mean, I know that there's some software that only runs in Windows, but I was able to access the flash drives and access the drives on the on the device from the Mac a lot easier than I was able to do so on a Windows computer. What are you finding, Barrett?
Well, I mean, I've bricked a lot of Android tablets, you know, everything from, like, the Nook, you know, things. There's something that's kind of hard to use. It's called ADB, like Alpha Delta Bravo. And if you go to XDA developers, you've got to follow some instructions, but people have some pretty step-by-step detailed tutorials on how to install that. So you kind of have to install an Android SDK. You've got to install this, then you boot it up, and it unbricks most things. It's kind of like how the Easy Flasher works, but it does a little bit better job.
Yeah, I read about the ADB, and I do have a Mac machine too. So I tried a little bit it was a little bit more complex, I guess. The Easy Flasher, I thought, well, was easy.
Yeah, listen, we're coming up on the top of the hour. We got to take a break here, but I would definitely go to the XD forums and try using and see if you can find some guidance there. You could post your problem to their discussion forums as well.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Okay,
all right,
guys.
Thanks for your call. Bye-bye. All right. The clock in here is stuck at 3:43:03. So
we shouldn't even be on the air.
No.
It's too early.
20,
yeah, this is probably correct.
15. All right, you're listening to Technology Bites. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back after these messages. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight.
And he's Groovehouse.
KPFT has just concluded its last fund drive of 2013. If you made a pledge this time, thank you very much. Your donation keeps this station on the air. If you promise to send a check, your envelope will arrive in the mail soon. Make sure to honor your commitment and send that back to KPFT. Most pledge drive gifts should be arriving in the coming weeks. Keep an eye out for that. If you have questions, call our membership department at 713-526-4000. And if you missed the opportunity to donate, visit kpft.org. Thank you again. This is KPFT Houston.
Did you know know you can find KPFT on the social networking sites Twitter and Facebook? You certainly can, and we'd love you to add us as a friend and get us connected with friends of yours. Join our fan page and check out a special video message from General Manager Dwayne Bradley, as well as keep up with KPFT programmers and staff. Visit facebook.com/KPFT Houston to join us. To follow us, visit twitter.com/KPFT. With both, you can link up with other KPFT listeners, get the latest news about the station, and find lots of extras. It's fun, so catch up with KPFT online. Again, on Twitter, visit twitter.com/KPFT. On Facebook, visit us at facebook.com/KPFT Houston. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, 90.1 KPFT Houston.
You're listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston, and now...
Hey, Barrett, what's happening?
I don't know.
Well, room around town.
Interrupt this skit to bring you...
Barrett time! Barrett time! Barrett time!
Yeah. That means it's time for...
Barrett time!
Yeah. Anyway. Take it away, Barrett.
All right. First and foremost, thanks again to all the wonderful supporters of the show and of KPFT who stepped up and did their part to keep us broadcasting through the end of the year. So whether you made a donation by web, by foot, or by phone, I would appreciate each and every bit of support that we received during our three-week trudge through Pledge Central. And really, as far as fundraisers go, that last show wasn't too bad. So a special thanks to Dwayne, Ernesto, Smiling Bob, Lobby Mike, and anyone else who lent a hand during the ordeal. And I guess a special... I guess I'd like to give a slither out to our new friend, Kiwi the Pledge Snake. So, anyway, after 3 years in absentia, I'd wanted to come back with an extra special Barrett time. That didn't happen, though.
Three weeks. Three years in absentia.
3 years in absentia. After 3 weeks in absentia, I'd wanted to come back with an extra special Barrett time. That didn't happen, though, as I've been going back and forth with the telecom company for most of the day after they provisioned some of our existing POTS lines that feed into the backup systems of our Cisco telephony stack. I won't say the name of the company, but it rhymes with Jaylee and me. So, that's definitely one kind of conflict. IT is conflict, really. Man versus user, man versus mouse, man versus Microsoft. Those are all fairly well-known.
Barrett versus keyboard.
Exactly, Barrett versus anything mechanical. Those are all fairly well-known daily struggles in IT. However, if we limit our conflict to the literary variety, we really only have four major players. So can anyone reach back to their high school or their freshman year of college and recall what those are? They're all man versus something.
Man versus...
Shark.
Machine.
That should be one. No. Yeah. Well, yeah, man versus machine, kind of. But they are. They're man versus no one.
God.
No. That's pretty awesome. No. Man versus nature, man versus self, man versus society are kind of the four.
Man versus society is man versus machine.
Yeah, you could look at it that way. So we can illustrate these by mapping them onto the Luke Skywalker character in Star Wars, episodes 4 through 6 only. So Luke living on the desert world of Tatooine, and then his adventures in the swamps of Dagobah, man versus nature. So Luke confronting the dark side in said swamp, man versus self. Luke battling it out with his dad, Darth. Man versus man. And finally, we know that Luke kisses his sister and then tries to kill his father. So even in the far reaches of space, there is a certain stigma associated with that. Man versus society. So
actually, the better man versus society is episode 1. George Lucas putting Jar Jar Binks in there.
No, that's why this was specifically, we are leaving out those episodes. We will not acknowledge those episodes. We won't even acknowledge the DVD releases.
The apocryphal Star Wars that we can't use those.
Now, I've got hope for the upcoming ones. But no, I refuse to admit the existence.
There may be a 7, right? The 7 may or may not exist.
We could see. It's like Schrodinger right now. We'll see what happens to that cat. So as they already kind of lead out this. So what happens if we take the classic conflicts and throw a machine into the mix? So man versus machine versus man. So what if one group of humans are doing everything they can to bolster the machines while another group is doing everything in their power to defeat them? What do you have?
Battlestar Galactica.
I knew that. See, I was just like, I'm waiting for Dwight to say Battlestar Galactica. I knew that was going to happen. Yeah, Battlestar Galactica. Go, Dwight. Maybe the Terminator series. Is there a third option?
Spy versus Spy.
There was, because that's Spy versus Spy. That's, you know, we need a machine in there. So there was 30 years ago. So somewhere between the time of John, Wow, machines are winning. Somewhere between the time John Henry took on the steam-powered jackhammer and a group of Jeopardy champions took on IBM's Watson, there was a weekend tournament for chess software programmers. A nostalgic moment when the contest between technology and the human spirit seemed a little more up for grabs. If you want to get acquainted with the eccentric geniuses possessed of the vision to teach a metal box to defeat man, literally at his own game, laying the groundwork for artificial intelligence as we know it and will come to know it in the future, you might want to free up your Saturday night for one of two screenings of the movie Computer Chess at the Museum of Fine Arts, Houston. As an added bonus, writer-director Andrew, I'm butchering his name, but I think it's Bujalski, will be on hand to answer questions about the movie. Aside from computers, chess, and the brilliance of some of the early day hackers, the movie looks to be chock full of awesome mustaches, glasses, and polyester shirts. You can head to www.mfah.org for details on the Houston premiere of the movie, or surf to computerchessmovie.com to get more info about the movie itself. If nothing else, hit the site and surf to the nerd corner. It's the perfect mix of creepiness and nerdiness. Now, had I the time, I would have liked to have traced the evolution of man versus machine from the Mechanical Turk in the 1770s, which was really just a dude in a box pulling some levers, to the Bernstein chess program, the first graphical user interface for chess programs, onto microcomputer chess, and the first dedicated chess computers. A quick check to see if anyone remembered the robotic chess game in the 80s that came equipped with a robotic arm that would move the pieces around the board for you, then the internet chess server, and finally Kasparov versus Deep Blue. I'll be sure to post this on the site, though, so those of you who are interested in the computer chess turning points I mentioned can Google them at will. So that's it for this rather weak end game, and that's that for Barrett time.
All right. So, second half of the show, underway.
Hey, so I'm just curious. I guess Peter will know. Was that Peter's dog that barked, or was that the guy on the phone's dog that barked?
That was my dog.
It sounded like a Skype bark.
Because I was going to say, that dog sounded really good this time and really loud.
It's the mic.
That new mic is a dog mic.
That was some seriously clear dog. It was so in your face, dog.
Well, part of it is it's relatively speaking a new dog for us, and she's large and has a very very solid bark.
So you just upgraded your dog.
They make dogs that don't bark. You know that, right?
Yeah, we inherited this one from a we inherited this one from a deceased relative, so we didn't get to pick out the dog.
I see dog people. All right. 713-526-5738. 713-526-KPFT if you want to be on the air. We have open lines. We also have people in the queue, and go over to Groove House and have him tell us what we have or who we have next.
Up next on the second half of the show, we're going to speak with Ken.
Ken, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Nice to be here.
Thank you.
The question is, I'm using Windows 8 Professional, and I have an XP program that I'd love to run on Windows 8 Professional. I know there's a way to do it on Windows 7. There's even an explanation on how to do it, but I couldn't find anything on Windows 8.
So you're trying to run an XP program on Windows 8. If your best chance would be to do whatever it takes to run it on Windows 7. That's not a guarantee, but the same type of... is there an XP mode for Windows 8, Dwight?
Oh, you mean like the emulator that's
In 7?
7 Ultimate in Enterprise? I don't think so, but you may be able to right-click if you can find the executable, right-click on it and choose properties, and there's a compatibility tab, and you may be able to go in there and tell it to run it as though it's in XP mode.
Okay, I'll give that a shot. Well, I appreciate it.
What software is it? Is it something that they're going to update for Windows 8, maybe?
No, they're never going to update it. It's something we developed for financial planning, and I'm having a hard time finding reasonable cost people to redo it for Windows 8.
You can always load up like an emulator, like VirtualBox, which is free, and install XP on there, and then load the program there, and basically run an emulator.
Okay.
So that would be an option.
Got it. Well, good. Okay. I appreciate your all's help very much. Enjoy the program. Too.
Right. Thank you for your call. Have a good evening.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. All right. 713-526-5738. Some people have taken advantage of that or taken the opportunity to dial in. We've got two calls in the queue. All the other lines are open. We've got, I don't know, that clock doesn't tell me anything. My computer clock tells me that we got about an hour left. So that was a nice, quick Barrett time.
Yeah, 50 and a half minutes.
50 and a half?
Although take out 2.5 for the outro.
Yeah, and another half for this. What we're doing right now.
47 and a half.
All right. Crew House.
Yes.
Who's up next?
Up next on the show, we're going to speak with Steven.
Steven, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, first time caller, first time listener. Love your show.
All right, thank you.
Quick question. I won't take too much of your time. I have a Nexus 4, and I'm interested in the Nexus 5. Can you give me pretty much some pointers on, I guess, if I should upgrade or should I stay with what I have? I'm with T-Mobile, by the way.
I mean, it's not that old of a phone, so if you want to shell out some more money for the phone.
Do you have spare money?
Yeah.
Yeah, are you made of money?
Can we have some?
Well, actually, I have someone that wants to buy my, I have a white Nexus for the limited one.
Yeah.
I have a guy that wants to pay $300 for it.
Well, and here's,
I believe the Nexus 5 is going to be $350, so.
Well, if you can get the Nexus 5 for $50.
The 16 gig version.
Yeah.
They're saying $350. It's been leaked but never verified.
Well, here's the deal with phones. I mean, obviously it's cost you the amount that it costs you to buy the phone when you get your new one. If you're not getting it subsidized, are you? Is your contract up? Are you eligible for a new phone?
Actually, the contract is up, but I always buy my phone straight out. I've never bought.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good way to do it.
Well, the good thing is, you know, one thing to consider is that, you know, the sooner you can sell your old phone, the more money you're going to get for it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're never going to recoup, you know, your investment in the phone. But if you're interested in the new technology, then the sooner you can sell off your phone, like, well, there's interest in that white one that you have now, that the amount of money that you can get for it is just going to go down as time goes by. So if you really want that new phone and you want to take advantage of being able to sell this one, it sounds like a reasonable deal.
Because, you know, there was rumor today that there's a white Nexus 5, at least the front of it, not the front end. The back of it, not the front end back, though, at least in the picture I saw. So you have to sell it to that guy before he sees that picture and decides he'll just get a white Nexus 5.
Right.
Yeah, that's a good point. But look, I appreciate it. I'll go ahead and just get rid of mine and get the new one.
The 5's nice. It's super fast. It's, like, extremely fast for gaming.
It's got good specs.
800, megahertz, Snapdragon, decent amount of RAM. It's nice.
Get it. Do it. Spend the money.
Hey,
get a new
phone. Thank God. I will listen to you all in the future.
All right. Thanks for your call. Bye.
I want to get one so I can wipe it and install Ubuntu OneNote on
it.
That's what I want it for. I want a full functioning computer that's the size of a phone in my pocket that I can carry around.
Like this?
No, you can't use that as a full computer. A real computer.
You are locked into a little garden with that one.
It's not even just the garden. Like, you can't use that as a fully open OS. It's like using an iPad.
Is that
or
the
whatever.
Definition of a computer?
That's my definition of a computer.
His definition of what he wants from. I see.
My definition of a computer is that, you know, it's a fully functioning open system that you can do pretty much whatever you want to with it. Install.
So did
install
you see this
stuff.
This announcement from Motorola called Project Era this week?
Nope.
Pete, did you catch that?
The Lego phone?
Kind of, yeah. It's essentially
a Lego phone.
Yeah, that's what it
the
is.
The modular phone.
Well, it's interesting.
You essentially buy the base, and then you customize it with particular modules.
I saw somebody, that's weird, I saw somebody, Diaspora, the Facebook open source Facebook competitor, a few months ago, I saw somebody post one of those and said, wouldn't this be a cool idea if you had just, like, you bought a base, and then you just had modules you plugged in.
Yeah, there's been a group called Block Phones or Phone Blocks.
That was that group,
right?
Yeah.
Phone Blocks, and they kind of have been championing this, and they are working with Motorola on Project Era. So
wow.
The two of them are working together, and there's an app you can. I did a blog post on this week. There's an app you could go and download to your phone to help with the research for it, and they will give you essentially assignments that you do in the app. And then you upload the data back to them as part of it. And it works with Android or iOS.
So it's an interesting project, and I hope they come up with it. I think that would be very cool.
See, when I imagined that, my fear was that it would make things too blocky.
Too squarish?
Well, because you have to add on all the connectors and all that stuff, and so it adds size. So when everything's trying to get thinner and smaller, it's gonna add dimension to a phone just by the fact that you've got, you know, a case around the base and all the connectors, and a case around both sides of each module on all sides. You know, so just
kind of the overhead of the connector, right, to go to, right, to add each piece.
Yeah.
Well, you just do it with magnets. You just kind of stick them together.
Because obviously, I mean,
that's what magnets are
Apple's,
good for.
Apple's been going for thinner and thinner and lighter, right, and lighter, and you know they've gotten to where they're soldering everything together and gluing everything
and gluing
together,
everything,
and
right,
you know, so you, when you get modular, you go back to that original bigger sizes.
Right.
But it's an interesting project, though. I mean, the idea of it's pretty cool. Yep. It's almost like Arduino stuff, where you have, like, you know, the Arduino motherboard, you know, and then you have all the, like, snap-on modules that you can stack.
Well, give me two. All right, 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with Technology Bites. We have plenty of open lines. We've got one call in the queue, so we're about to deplete our resources for incoming calls, so if you want to be on the air, now's the opportunity. Groovehouse.
Yes.
Who is that last call in the queue that we have?
That's Dolores.
Dolores, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Yes. I had just about an hour ago, my computer was working fine, and then I closed my laptop, and I closed the lid on it for a few minutes, and when I opened it back up, nothing comes on the screen, and it seems, and the only thing that happens is that the caps lock key blinks, the light on it blinks on and off.
It's a laptop, you say?
Yes, it's HP.
Have you tried forcing it to turn all the way off?
I've done that several times, and it off.
Like really off, like you pulled the power button down until it all the lights go out and it shuts completely down?
Take the battery out?
Yes, I haven't done that.
But you're sure it's turning off. So it's, when it boots up, it's just coming up with a black screen.
What's a flashing caps lock key?
Yeah, does that ever go off entirely?
It's got a light on it that shows when it's working, and it just flashes on and off.
So when you hold down the power button, does that eventually stop flashing?
Right, everything goes off.
Right. It sounds like it's got some kind of hardware issue that's going on. That, I mean, you don't get. Does it post anything to the screen at all?
No, it's okay. Black.
Okay, so you say it's an HP?
Right. It looks like the G62 is the model.
How old is it?
About maybe a year and a half, something like that.
Well, unfortunately, what you have, I mean, if you're not getting anything out to the display and you're getting a blinking light on the keyboard, that means there's an electronic problem that's going to probably have to be addressed by a technician. There's not like a switch you can go into and flip it and take it from broken to fixed. It's going to need somebody to take a look at it. I don't know what it is. I mean, my experience with HP in the past is that when they do something like this, you've got a system board problem, and it may be, I don't know if it'll be worth it to fix it or not, but you're going to have to take it into a technician and have them look at it.
When it boots up, does it beep or do anything like that?
No. Okay. I can hear the power come on, but that's it, and the light.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably not even getting past the BIOS. It's probably...
Yeah, I mean, if it's not posting anything to the screen, it's the system itself is just not firing up. It's not loading the BIOS. It's not, you know, bringing up the system so it can then load the operating system from the drive. It's a hardware failure that's, you know, unfortunately, there's just not a quick fix for it. You're going to need to take it into a technician. I don't suppose you have an extended warranty or anything like that on it, do you?
No. I was just wondering if it's worth it to try to fix it or just get a new one.
Well, that's going to be up to you. A year and a half. How much do you have invested in the laptop? Money wise.
I got it on sale.
You got it on sale?
Yeah.
Well, it's not really an answer to my question, but okay, you got it on sale, so that might make it even more worthwhile to get it fixed. It just really depends on what's wrong with it.
Uh-huh.
I mean, was it new when you bought it?
Oh, it was refurbished.
Like from who? Yeah. From HP or from?
Yes, from well, I got it from Radio Shack, actually.
Okay. Well, it's hard to say. I mean, I don't know what your financial situation is. You can go, you know, it's only a year and a half old. So in the past, I've talked to people who've had faulty computers, and if it was the computer was 3 to 5 years old, then yeah, a new computer, it almost makes more sense to buy a new computer than to have that one fixed. But the new, since it's only a year and a half old, you're not going to get that much more computer for your money, so it might be worth it to fix it. If it depends if it's a couple hundred bucks or less to fix it. But you're going to have to take it to a technician and let them tell you what's wrong with it. But if you don't want to be bothered with that or you don't want to hassle with it and you've got money to spend, you could certainly go out and buy a $300 or $400 laptop that'll probably be just fine and replace that one.
Okay.
All right. Thanks for your call. Appreciate it. Have a good night. All right, 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. You know, I mean, I don't know. Would you get it fixed, right?
No.
No? A year and a half old? It's just the whole thing just decided to die?
I would say how much it was, at least, if there's a way to get a cheap estimate. You know, if it's like a $50 fix, I'd do it.
I don't know if there's,
yeah, I mean, the worst thing,
I don't know if there's a $50 fix in the world. There's a $50 diagnostic.
Right. That's the thing.
It's going to be probably $100 or more. What I would, you know, one thing I might do is just, you know, try to, depends on whether she's invested in the data that, because everything on the hard drive is going to be probably okay. So you could shop for another chassis, you know, just another exact model and take your hard drive and put it, if all of your software matters to you. If none of that matters to you and you're willing to just take this laptop and toss it, then go buy a new one.
Guess on a refurbed, you know, old computer from Radio Shack couldn't be more than a few $100.
Yeah.
It's an instance where the model for products like Google Chromebooks makes sense, right?
Yeah, actually.
You know, because you basically lose nothing.
All right. So
while that was going on, I discovered this. So, gentlemen, if you have iOS 7 on your phone, grab your phones, hold on tight, go to settings. All right.
Okay.
Privacy,
okay.
Location services. Scroll all the way down.
I got a long way to scroll.
Yep. So you get to system services, which is at the bottom. Tap on
that. Wow, okay. That was a long way down.
Look at the bottom of that screen where it says frequent locations. Tap that.
Uh-huh.
See some cities down there? Probably at least one, Houston.
Yeah.
Tap a city.
Whoa!
Yeah, buddy.
That's kind of scary.
That's every place your phone has been.
Wow. I can't scrunch the map. Can't do anything with the map.
No, you can't do anything with the map.
You locked up my phone.
I got two cities. I've got Bel Air, too.
Well, see, I've been...
Bel Air is just... Whoa, that's not even Bel Air. Thank you very much.
I've got Houston, Edna, Texas, Corpus Christi, Pearland, and Corrales, New Mexico, which is where I've been lately.
Wow.
So, yeah.
So what? Oh, there it is.
So that's everywhere I've been since I've installed this OS.
Right.
Because it's not everywhere this phone's been.
Right.
Yeah. Now, is that information being transmitted to anybody?
NSA, who do you think?
I think the NSA's put these on my phone.
Sure.
Well, actually, I think that... Wasn't there some thing like a year or so ago with Apple and location?
Yeah.
Like location being... And I think maybe what they're doing is they're showing you what's there. And you could turn this off.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You could turn off frequent locations.
It. I'm just wondering, it's got me at my job 24 visits since September 23rd. I guess that's about right.
So allow your phone to learn places you frequently visit in order to provide useful location.
Mine did that to me. Mine when I was coming over here to the radio station, for example, a couple of weeks ago, I had cause to pull down that top menu, you know, slide down,
yes.
And it said, with current traffic conditions, you are about 9 minutes away from KTFT.
That's like Google Now, similar to Google Now.
Right? So it told me that I was, you know, it knew that I was, not only did it know that I, because I wasn't really near KPFT, but it somehow knew that I was between where I would leave to go to KPFT and where I would be, you know, where I was headed. That was just very strange.
Yeah, right now, mine says, right now, it would take you about 6 minutes to drive home.
Does that say that in the pull down?
Yes.
Where is this?
I got 23 minutes.
This is the pull down on, I think when you swipe down from the top.
I'm going to pull mine down again because I haven't.
Oh, yeah, this is fun.
Mine just has my calendar.
Yeah, you may not have had enough.
Mine says, no, mine doesn't have any distances.
So you know what that is? That's like Google Now.
Yeah, although Google Now is now saying, hey, do you want to share updates on your daily commute with family or friends?
Yes, yes. That's a new feature in it. Yeah.
All I got is emergency alerts. I don't have anything that tells me that, because I guess maybe I'm not moving. I don't know. All right. Interesting and scary. All right, 713-526-5738. You know, just be aware that your call, if you call in to be on the air with Technology Bites, people may be listening in on the call. 713-526-5738. Groovehouse.
Yes.
Groovehouse. Yep. Who is the next call in the link to hold for Houston, Texas Technology Bites?
Next caller for link to hold in Technology Bites is Tony.
Tony, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
In Houston, Texas.
Are you listening now?
We are. What's up, man?
I wanted to mention the man versus machine.
Okay.
It would be spy versus I spy.
Okay.
Robert Culp and Bill Cosby.
Wow. All right.
That's all I had to say.
All right. Thanks for your call.
You're welcome.
Wow. So that's all we needed. All right, 713-526-5738 is the number to call if you want to be on the air with Technology Bites. Well, all of our lines are open. We've got plenty of time left in the show. What's up,
all Chris? The iPhones are out in the studio. If you have an iPhone, it's out and in
what,
your hand.
What are all these things?
All these
things. Push everything.
There's all
push
these
everything.
System services, popular near me, setting time zone, location-based iAds.
iAds?
Yeah. Location-based iAds.
Yeah, so it gives you ads about, like, businesses that you're near, I guess.
When do you use iAds?
When you see ads. So they're tailored and customized to you.
You mean, like, when you're using an app, when it's loading those ads for them?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. My phone knows more about me than I do.
Hey, we're all looking at our phones.
All right.
Great radio.
Interesting.
It's pretty cool. So you can wrap applications in iOS 7. You can wrap them in a VPN connection. That's pretty cool. No one uses their stuff for VPN.
No. I use VPN sometimes.
I've been known to VPN with my phone.
Not with my phone, though.
Yeah, I've VPN'd with my phone to then SSH into a box.
Yeah, I'm not above that late at night versus going in or finding a real machine.
All right, 713-526-5738. We can keep looking at our phones and being mystified by them. All of our lines are open. Open, open, open. If you would like to be on the air with Technology Bites, this is your opportunity. Now is the time. Now is the time, 713-526-5738. 713-526-KPFT. If you'd like to be on the air, all the lines are open. Mm-hmm. Geek Gathering this Friday, so we'll give the second hour listeners a chance to be aware of the fact that we will be doing a Geek Gathering this Friday at Cones. You can go to geekradio.com for more details on the event. Yeah, I did put something up there. Okay, yes. Yes,
I have no geofences.
Oh, no.
You know what geofences are, right?
A geofence is a virtual perimeter around a location. Apps like Reminders use geofencing to notify you when you arrive at or leave these locations.
Does it have geocities?
Now, there's another kind of geofence because I use a geofence on my Flickr so that any images that I take that are geotagged, it does not show them on a map to anybody who's looking. If I set up a perimeter, you know, around my house, you know, you could know what side of town I live on if I took a photo at my house, but you won't know what my address is because all of my photos are taken with
So somebody could just analyze all your photos and find the area find the area of the perimeter around where there's no photos location, and then go to the center of that, and that's where your house is.
Or just follow the peacocks.
Yeah.
Or just follow them home from the station.
Wow, guys, thanks a lot. I'll be the tall redheaded guy.
It looks like that only works on an iPhone. On an iPad, I don't have the frequent locations. It's not on there.
Because I'm sure it's using cell tower.
Yeah, it's talking to cell tower.
Well, this is an LTE based, and it could be if I used it enough, it might show up, but this iPad doesn't have it.
Wow, phones are dead. All right, let's just go home.
Everybody's sitting at home going, oh, my God, look at that data.
Album rock time. All right, 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with Technology Bites. We've got a little bit of time left this evening, and we've had some good calls, but we have time for more good calls if you want to be on the air. Let's see, is anything happening? Was it Rockets? Or not tonight, Friday night, right? Rockets, Groovehouse, no? Tonight. Oh, there is Rockets tonight?
Yes, it's their season opener tonight.
World Series game.
Oh,
World Series. You know, I was just interrupting all my primetime television shows.
Oh, is that where everything went on Hulu and what have you?
Well.
That's why a lot of things have taken a week break.
Yeah, that's why reruns are on a lot of them.
Okay.
Because they're not going to compete with. They
don't watch anything live anyway. What difference does it make?
I don't know what the logic is.
I don't either.
But they just—they don't run premium content if the competition is too strong. So like during World Series and Super Bowls, and especially World Series and playoffs and things like that, you see very little new content. There's a few stations that don't care. There was a new Sons of Anarchy last night.
Oh, I forgot about that. I started watching a little bit of Blacklist.
It was a bunch of bikers making bad decisions.
For yes. 5 years.
Yes. Totally new episode, I swear. It's like that new episode of Gilligan's Island I saw where they almost got off the island, but Gilligan screwed
so
it up.
So how long are you watching them, like, on television with commercials?
No. I usually watch, for example, Sons of Anarchy. I usually watch when I get home from this show. So it gets recorded last night, I watch it tonight. But last night I was up buzzing on coffee, and I had about a half hour buyback, what I call buyback time. So it allows me to fast forward through the commercials.
Right.
So I had a half hour buyback, and so I watched it last night.
So I see it on my iPhone or iPad at the gym when I'm on the elliptical. And so I make myself stay on the elliptical till whatever show I'm watching is done. So if it's like an hour show, when you take the commercials out, if you
download
it, 45 minutes. But Sons of Anarchy has been running.
They've been an hour and 15, yeah. hour and a half.
They have been running an hour and a half?
Yeah.
Yeah, because I'm on there usually about an hour and five, hour and 10 minutes.
The last two episodes have been an hour and 15 minutes. There were some a few weeks ago that were an hour and a half.
Huh. So eight to nine, 90
minutes.
They do commercials during them? Is that an FX? Yeah. I watch it on Amazon, so I just get straight.
They jam in. Uncut. They jam in the commercials, but they're jamming in a lot of content, I guess.
Yeah, it's been a good season.
They just put the fifth season on Netflix. Yeah. So now I can watch that.
Yeah.
We have a call.
Do you have a call? Sons of Anarchy show. I was driving through town, listening to a show, talking.
Got a daughter of Anarchy, possibly.
All right, 713-526-5738. We got one call we're about to bring on the air. We've got all the other lines are open, so if you want to be on the air, dial in 713-526-KPFT. Greenhouse.
Yes.
Who do we have?
Up next, we're going to speak with Elizabeth.
Elizabeth, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Thanks for taking my call.
No problem.
So I'm a beginner.
Okay.
I have a laptop that I really took around all over the place, and the screen doesn't work anymore, and I need to get the data off of it. So I'm a layperson. I don't have any real equipment at home. What would you recommend as a cost-effective way to do that?
There's two ways you can do it. Well, the easiest way to do it would be to take the hard drive out of the laptop and put it into an external enclosure, which is like runs about $20, that you can then plug that into a USB port on another computer and copy your files.
Okay.
Now, if taking the hard drive out or messing with all that kind of stuff is a little too much,
no,
maybe.
I don't mind doing it, but it's a netbook. It's a small one, so it's going to have a small hard drive. Am I going to be able to find it?
Is it like an Acer or something? Or
they use standard.
Yeah, they use standard.
That's super easy. A couple of small Phillips screws on the back, and it's out. And if you're nervous about it, just Google, say, replace hard drive with your model of netbook, and just only do half of it. Don't put a new one back in.
The other option you have is to find an external monitor and connect it to the laptop and see if you can fire it up, and then you can plug in an external hard drive to it and copy your files over.
You can bring it to the Geek Gathering and Flicked. It'll take it apart for you.
Good. All right, and if there's time, I don't know, do you have time to tell me what you might recommend for good laptops under $500? Because obviously I'm looking for a new one.
Well, you can check out all the different brands. Everybody makes one that's going to be in that price range. I mean, all the name brands are, we don't really have a way of saying, you know, buy a Dell, an HP, or anything like that, but take a look at the major manufacturers. Take a look at Dell. Take a look at HP. Take a look at Sony. Take a look at who else should they look at?
Could look at, you could maybe
Chromebook?
Even
Asus is good.
Yeah. Chromebook.
That's what I was gonna say. What do you do with it? What are you gonna be doing with the laptop?
Well, I'm gonna be using it primarily for email, but I would like to be able to review sound files on it. I'm a musician. Probably I'm not going to be able to buy like a full sound editing capable computer right now, but I want to at least be able to save some sounds, listen to them, and do some high memory web stuff because I use a web brain training.
I'm thinking a Chromebook would not be the thing for this.
Okay.
I'm thinking like a full-on laptop. So, yeah, I mean, if you got a budget, what I would recommend is go to a place like a Best Buy or Fry's or Micro Center. And they usually have all their laptops on display, and then they start off from the cheapest, and then they go up in features and capability as you go along.
Okay.
And just see what you can get for the amount of money you're willing to spend. You know, with a laptop, if you're going to use it every day, I recommend spending as much as you can afford and getting as much computer as you can afford.
Are the warranties generally worthwhile? Or, like, do I need a manufacturer? I want to go for, like, a manufacturer warranty kind of thing.
Manufacturer warranty tends to be, unless you got through Apple, you get the Apple Care if you wanted to switch to an Apple. But if you're looking at a Windows computer, then the manufacturer's warranty typically is only a year. And you can buy an extended warranty through the store that you buy it from.
But if you're dropping only $500, sometimes the extended warranties are like $99. That's 20% of the machine, whereas I'd rather just save that and then get a machine 20% faster the next one.
Yeah. Okay, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate you.
All right, well, thanks for your call. Good luck.
Thanks. Good night.
Good night.
I wouldn't recommend this tour, but this is pretty cool. So there's Audacity is out for Chromebook now.
Oh, really?
That's what I was wondering. I was wondering if there were any.
So they're
kind
getting
of
to the point now where it's not
Chromebook.
Just consuming of media. You can actually start to do stuff on the Chromebook, which is pretty cool. So,
I've never looked at Chromebooks in detail. I mean, I know it's all based on kind of Gmail account or whatever, like store stuff.
Mostly
in the
cloud,
for docs and spreadsheets and all that stuff. But outside of that, like, can you use it as a regular computer at all, or is it pretty much like an iPad in a laptop form?
You're not as locked down, but I also don't have any friends that have, you know, broken it or done anything like that with it, so I don't know what the limitations are. But it's at the price point, and now that you can actually run some legitimate apps, it's kind of looking attractive. That from a distance, it looks kind of like a MacBook Air.
Hmm. All right. 713-526-5738. Groovehouse keeps waving his arm in the air, and I'm not sure what's going on with that. It seems...
Flies.
Is it?
Flies.
Is it bugs? Is
or
it
just means he just don't care.
We're in bat country now.
Oh, yeah. All right. All right. So I see Groovehouse is fielding a call right now. So that's good. We will have a call on the air here shortly. Technology Bites, you know, here every Wednesday night, providing you with technology talk. All right. I see Groovehouse has a call for us. Groovehouse.
What did I miss?
You didn't miss anything. I just like,
flailing arms.
I see you every once in a while. Out of the corner of my eye, I see your arm flying. Like, I don't know if you're like, you know,
hey-o,
let's go. Wagon train.
I don't know. Maybe it's my bursitis acting up. I don't know. Arm starts flailing.
That could be it, maybe.
Maybe.
All right.
All right.
Groovehouse?
Yes.
Who do we have?
Oh, hi, Jay.
Hi.
Up next on the show, we are going to speak with Steve.
Steve, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hi, this is Steve Horn. I have a question I'm sure you've answered about 1,000 times, but I haven't heard your answer to it.
Okay.
A friend of mine just bought a new computer. It doesn't have a touch screen. It's a good computer, but it comes with Windows 8, and they absolutely hate it. And is there... can you switch Windows 8 back to a Windows 7 type screen without having to download a separate app or something for it?
Well, what do you say, a Windows 7 like screen? You can get to a desktop on Windows 8.
Uh-huh.
Windows 8.1 makes it much easier, right?
Windows 8.1 makes it even easier for that, where you can get to like a start menu and a desktop and that sort of thing. You can get rid of the tiles they call that.
Mm-hmm. The
start screen.
In fact, in
Windows 8.1, you can basically tell it when my computer boots up, I don't want to see the start screen unless I invoke it. It starts up at the desktop.
Okay, do you go through that to personalize or?
I forget if you're. It's in Windows 8.1, so you have to download 8.1, which is free.
But if you have 8, then 8.1 is free.
If you have 8, then 8.1 is free.
Okay.
The other option would be.
I found a free, app online or something that would create the old Windows 7. Opening screen with a start button and so forth.
Yeah, there are several out there, but it's
not really necessary.
To the other one all the time when you close things and so forth. So.
Yeah, it's not really necessary.
You have to have Windows 8.1.
Well, you can get to a basic desktop in Windows 8, but if you're running Windows 8, the upgrade to Windows 8.1 is free and it's very worthwhile. It adds a lot more functionality and usability to the operating system and gets you closer to where you are. Because they recognized that people wanted to have more of a Windows 7 style experience, so Windows 8.1 addresses some of that.
Yeah, because unless you have a touch screen, it's annoying.
Right.
I agree.
So I'll download Windows 8.1 if they haven't already got it.
Right.
My machine runs on 7, so I don't, Okay, I really appreciate it. Thank you very much.
All right, thanks for your call.
Okay.
Bye. Although, I don't like 7 either.
Yeah. But I like 7 more than 8.
I like 7 more than 8.
The last one I ran was XP. And so Vista felt similar to XP when I ran it that one time, although it was still a little weird. But then 7 got weirder. A lot of people like it better. But then 8, just went off.
People are going to have to start moving. The big issue now with XP isn't that XP's end-of-lifing. You know, pretty soon it's that browsers are starting to announce no more XP support. So I want to say, did Firefox and Chrome both say no more XP support?
Well, Chrome will quit supporting it, I think, in 2015.
Yeah.
That's what they've said, so it's a ways off. But, Microsoft quit supporting XP next year. So XP just needs to die.
They just need to make an OS that's as good as XP.
Yeah.
They have. Much better.
I mean, Ubuntu's good, but I don't know.
I prefer Mint, but,
I've never run Mint.
No?
So I was wrong about all the Chromebooks being cheap. I was not aware of the Pixel.
Oh, the Pixel, yeah.
That's like a MacBook Air priced Chromebook.
Yeah, and it's beautiful.
Is it? Have you touched one?
Yes. James Kendrick has one, and I've had a chance.
I don't think I've seen it, but it's touchscreen, right?
Yeah. Yeah, he needs to come to the Geek Gathering to bring his Pixel. In fact, here, let me
tweet him. Yeah, make that
tweet
happen
him.
Friday.
Tweet that man.
Summon him. And it looks like we got someone coming on the phones here, too.
Yeah, see Groovehouse screening another call.
15 more minutes.
Screwing up or screening?
I did not say that. I said screening. Could have give Groovehouse a complex.
She's listening now.
Yeah, here it comes. All right, Groovehouse.
Yeah,
whatever. Yeah, whatever. See what you did, Pete? All right.
Yes.
Hi, Groovehouse.
Hi. Hi, Jake.
So are you shooting something this week, or are you going to come out to the Geek Gathering?
I won't be shooting anything for a while. Yeah, I'll probably be at the Geek Gathering.
All right, cool.
Yeah.
All right, who do we have on the phones?
Up next, we are going to speak with Daniel.
Daniel, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good.
Okay, first off, when is the Geek Gathering?
The Geek Gathering is tomorrow night. I usually mess that. It's Friday night. It's at Cones. We should have mentioned that in Barrett time. It's 2808 Milam at Drew. So if you know where Milam is, a little bit, you know, outside of downtown, pretty
this
easy
Friday?
Parking. Excuse
it's this,
me?
It's this Friday.
This
we
Friday.
Had it the first Friday of the month.
I gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. And my question / comment is, yeah, what is up with that? That they're stopping the updates for... XP and the different, you know, running files for it. I still run XP on, like, my 8-10-year-old laptop, and she's slowly falling apart because she can't support anything anymore.
Well, XP is just an outdated operating system whose time has come.
It's a fantastic operating system.
And you can still run it.
Yeah, I mean, I try as best I can.
It might be time to reinstall it.
That'll breathe a lot of life into it.
You'd be amazed if you have an 8-year-old computer and you've never reinstalled the operating system. You'd be amazed at how much life will come back to that computer by doing that. It's like having a new PC. Your operating system deteriorates over time. So a refresh can really make it seem like it. Because as the computer's gotten slow over the 8 years, you've kind of gotten used to it. It's become more and more frustrating, but you don't really expect anything from it. So when you go all the way back to factory fresh, it's like, oh, my God, this thing is screaming fast.
Yeah. So would I need the original startup disks to do that?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
And you should be able to. Is it a Dell, did you say?
I think it's an HP.
Now you should have either a recovery partition or it came with startup disks or it gives you the ability to make them.
Okay. I'll check for that ability to make it, because I don't think I have one.
All right.
But at any rate, thanks, guys. Appreciate
All right, thanks
it.
For your call. Bye. Yeah. The calls go fast. Really, really fast. And then there's none. 713-526-5738.
What was that call about?
XP.
XP.
Why is it going away?
Why is it going away?
I
love it even though I haven't reinstalled it in forever and my computer's falling apart and runs real slow. But I don't want to switch.
But I love it.
Excellent synopsis.
Thank you.
I mean, I don't know because I didn't actually listen to the call.
Because I wasn't actually paying attention.
So how many back is XP? So we had XP, then we went to me, Vista. So we're four back now.
Was
we got seven,
after
eight.
No, me was
oh, it was me
XP.
Before XP,
yeah.
Was it?
Me,
oh, 98,
me
and
was
then
the
me,
millennium.
And then XP.
It was the last version of the 3195 version
the branch,
before they went to NT. And so it was like them trying to squeeze the last amount of money out of the 98 branch before they went to the NT-based 2000.
I stayed away from me.
Yeah. I
stay away from me. Or you. Or whoever.
I remember. Who was it? I was over at somebody's apartment, and they had a computer that was running ME, and they asked me to try to figure something out for them. And It was horrible.
There was about 3 or 4 months when everyone was shipping me, you know, like Dell and all the manufacturers, and then it seemed like they
Let's call it
that
ME. Let's call it ME instead ME. Of me. Because you say you're shipping me.
Millennium.
Are you shipping me?
Can we call it Wince? Wincy.
Yeah, you can call it
Wince.
But yeah, it was like they wanted to make the last bit of money off the 95-98 branch of the kernel and Microsoft Bob. And so they put Bob on top of 98 and called it ME. At least it had USB support.
God, I remember when that was a challenge.
That was
even versions of the 95. Some had, some didn't.
There was 95 second edition.
Had to go to B or C.
Yeah.
first had it.
It was 98 second edition was the first OS that came from Microsoft with USB support built into it.
All right. Let's go back to looking at our, contemplating our phone navels.
Contemplating XP going away.
You know, I mean, I think it's a...
it's kind of a joke at this point. I'm not actually saying no, XP should stick around.
I think XP just threatens a lot, but so far it hasn't left. It just hangs around.
Still running. It's like it's
well, still you know,
it just threatens to leave.
I mean it, guys. I really mean it.
Okay, I know a few months ago I said I was going to leave, and I didn't leave, like, but I'm serious this
like,
time.
I got to go, but one more blue screen.
It's just one more relative that won't go.
No, it's like the guy on the corner with the sign that says one day only sale, and he's out there every day with the same sale price sign. It's like that. But, you know, I mean, I think people, like, everybody's like, oh, no. Support for XP is going away. Well, how much support do you need?
Yeah, really.
You know, I mean, it's not like you call Microsoft to solve your problems. You call Technology Bytes or you find your answer online.
How many machines do you think there are still running Windows 3.1?
Very few.
I don't think there's any.
Really?
There are thousands.
I declare none. Prove me wrong.
Thousands.
Actually, I have Windows 3.1.1 running on a VM.
I wouldn't be surprised if, yeah, there's thousands just because they're running like some
just
like arcane
running.
Robotic yeah. arm in some factory and they never upgraded it to run on any other version of software.
I'm sure a good 5 or 6 dozen basements, there's going to be a Windows 3.10 box down there.
If you're running Windows 3.1, give us a call. Send us an email.
Let Not as a virtual. It has to actually be the base
there
OS.
There was the guy with the ST. Oh, no, so that was even DOS, right?
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, 3.1 hasn't quite hit that coolness spot of like, ooh, it's retro. Like, someone shows up with like a trash 80 box or something like really cool. You're like, oh, that's really neat. But no one goes like, oh, wow, is that a 3.10 box? That's probably
well, one thing that's undercutting the old operating systems as far as the coolness of having it running on the original hardware is I was looking at a list of computers emulated in the browser. And so when your machine, when it's so weak that you can basically run it in a flash thing or in some other emulation in a browser, it's kind of hard to be too, you know, it's like most people don't look back fondly on their, you know, car they had in high school that had, you know, a 60 horsepower motor in it, you know.
I think seeing a machine running Windows 2.0 might be interesting.
Would be anything pre-3.0 would be pretty cool to see.
Can you run DOS in a browser yet?
Yeah, I've seen it. Well, it's a DOS simulator. It doesn't tie into the operating system because that'd just be bad.
Yeah.
I guess Webmin does that.
All right. I see a call coming in. We are gradually going to run out of time. It's about 3:43:03 according to the clock.
we're in the XP phase of the show.
Passing slowly.
We have 8 minutes left in the show. We got one call in the queue. We're going to be wrapping things up here, but we might be able to get another call or so in if you want to dial 713-526-5738. Aha, this looks interesting. Groovehouse, what do we have?
Up next, we're going to speak with Daniel.
Daniel, you're on the air with Technology Bytes.
Hey, it's Daniel again. I was just going to make a comment about that 3.11. You were running DOS 5.0, weren't you?
5.0 or 6.0?
6.0. It was 6.0. Or 6.22.
2.2
yeah,
or then 6.0.
Like a 386 or a 486 box.
I remember 3.10 on a 286 for a little while. 3.10 on a 286 before I stepped up to a 486.
Yeah, I ran Windows 3.1.1 on a 486.
Yeah.
And on a Pentium.
I did it on a 3 and a 4. Yeah, so right with you. I actually still have those. I'm sure they still work.
All right.
All right, dude, take it easy, guys.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening.
Bye-bye.
I think maybe Pentiums were out when 95 came out.
They were just starting to hit, but they were pretty pricey. Yeah. You were just getting out of you still saw a lot of 386 boxes out there. That's kind of the fact. There was some 486s out there. That's kind of cool. Linux, which does, you know, the different release versions, they hit 3.10 and 3.11 recently, and they got really, really close to being on the 20th anniversary of a Windows 3.11 when they released 3.11, and they did some sort of nod to Windows when they did it, like Linux for work groups or something like that. I forgot what they called it.
Wow. All right, well, I don't even know if I want to try to get another call on here. I keep looking at the clock. It does me
no good.
Yeah.
We got
about 6 minutes.
Six
minutes, minus the 2 minutes for the
outro. We could probably do a speed round.
If you call in and talk fast.
Right.
You know what? Tomorrow's Halloween, but also tomorrow is a Dynamo playoff game. So it'll probably be raining heavily, torrential raining in Houston, Texas, during the Dynamo game.
It's supposed to quit between 6 and 8. It's supposed to quit raining.
Are you going to the game? Good. Yeah.
So take your raincoat. Just don't.
Fortunately, I'm in a seat that should be under the overhang.
You'll still get wet.
I ride my motorcycle.
Yeah, so there you go.
That's cool. The new Linux boot screens, the 311 boot screens, actually shows Tux the Penguin holding the old Windows logo, which is pretty awesome. And it's called Linux for Work Groups, just that one version. That's pretty awesome.
So precious. When a real bad thunderstorms happens, get inside your house so you can be safe. For severe thunderstorms in Houston, Texas.
You know, you just put a Casio beat behind that, and it sounded like that. What's that guy's
name? A little samba, a little bossa nova.
Don't go near the open fields, such as golf courses. So you don't get struck by lightning. And stay away from the beaches, and don't go near the shore. Because there could be some big waves and very strong winds in Galveston, Texas as well. Power lines could be dim, telephone poles could be snapped in half, and tree branches could also be snapped in half, and trees could be uprooted, and transformers could be snapped in half as well.
Serious.
Don't drive your car to the flood, or your car could get stalled during severe thunderstorms in Houston, Texas.
What's that guy's name? Rock and Roll McDonald's.
Wesley Willis.
Avoid the puddles and wear your rain gear. Don't walk through the puddles.
Don't walk through the puddles.
Wear your raincoats, wear your rubber boots, and wear your rain suits so you don't get wet. On Thursday in Houston, Texas, during severe thunderstorms. Have your flashlights ready. Have your extra batteries ready. Have your...
See, that's what you get when you don't call.
Crank radio.
Yeah, hand crank radio.
And have your extra bottle of water ready.
If it's raining, can you catch the rainwater?
Package of ice cubes.
And have your generators ready.
Acid rain. Don't drink the water.
Houston, Texas on Thursday. Best luck, yeah. People in Houston, Texas, be prepared for severe thunderstorms on Thursday, October 31st, 2013. Take care and stay safe. It's okay, caught in the thunderstorms. Be safe.
All right, Frankie.
And that was brought to you by the William Shatner School of Pausing.
Well, can you TiVo those pauses out?
That needs to be auto-tuned. Really?
Might be already.
I don't know. It's just a thunderstorm for tomorrow. It's pretty new.
It's mono-tuned.
Mono-tuned. All right. Well, you've been listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight Silverman. And that's Groovehouse.
In Houston, Texas.
Good morning, Ithaca.
We'll see you next Wednesday night for more technology.
Geek Gathering.
Geek Gathering. Geek Gathering Friday.
Be there.
We must offer a great vision for Americans. We must inspire the people of this country. We must give Americans hope. We must touch people's hearts.
Dennis Kucinich, former congressperson from Ohio and presidential candidate, will receive the National Peacemaker Award and give the keynote address at the annual awards dinner of the Houston Peace and Justice Center on Saturday, November 9th. Come and help us celebrate the work of Dennis Kucinich and our local peacemakers, Pancho Angeles, Christine Kovic, Mustafa Carroll, and Lisa Falkenberg. See hpjc.org for more information. The dinner will be at the University of Houston Hilton Hotel. This year, a special reception will be held in the afternoon before the dinner with Dennis Kucinich and our local Peacemaker awardees for people making an extra donation. Advance reservations are required. For details and to reserve tickets for the dinner and the reception, visit hpjc.org. This is KPFT, Houston.
First you listen, then you fall in love. You have your favorite programs that you listen to each and every week. And finally, you do the right thing by calling in that pledge of support to KPFT. You feel great, but guess what? Your job, it's not done just yet. You still need to fulfill your promise to KPFT by sending that pledge payment today. And when you do, you take that often forgotten last step. Don't wait any longer. KPFT depends on you.
You are listening to 90.1 FM, KPFT, Houston. Coming up next is Explorations with Dr. Michio Akaku. Dr. Michio Akaku. Thank you.